originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm sitting here in our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to thank everyone tuning in tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF is a great charity that provides financial assistance to former riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Please, if you're able to help, visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So my guest this evening has quite the comeback story. He's originally from Ireland, but you'll see him frequent the winner's circle in Maryland these days with 274 victories in the U.S., not including all of Europe. We're excited to hear his story. It's a pleasure to introduce jockey Fergal Lynch. Fergal, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Christina.
So great to have you here, Fergal, and thank you for taking time out of your busy day. As I mentioned during the introduction, you're riding in Maryland, and here we are coming up on the Preakness Stakes. What's the atmosphere like there in Maryland?
It's really starting to get busy around here. Everybody's very excited about the Preakness. Even non-horse racing people, they still appreciate it's a big day, it's a big occasion. It brings a lot of money to the state, and everybody's looking forward to it.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've been to the Preakness a couple times, and that is my favorite of the three Triple Crown races to go to in person anyway, and exciting times. Who do you like in the big race?
I've liked Dreamin' ever since he won his maiden in Tampa. It's always great to follow a good horse. If he can win the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, it gets from the back pages to the front pages, and hopefully he can be a Triple Crown winner.
That would be exciting if we have another Triple Crown winner, and good stuff, Fergal, good stuff. So where are you riding anywhere today?
I'm just on my way back from Fair Hill. I seem to spend a lot of time in Fair Hill, Laurel, Philadelphia, so I'm just always on the road.
I remember those days, Fergal. I rode there in that mid-Atlantic
circuit. I bet you don't miss them.
I miss them, but I don't miss all of the hours. I don't miss the hours I spent on the road. I can tell you that much. But it's a great opportunity, given that there are so many racetracks to ride at all of the time. Never a dull moment.
It's great tonight with Delaware opening in the next few weeks. And we've got Delaware, Philadelphia, Laurel, Penn National. Monmouth just opened, so it's starting to really crank up another gear now. Everybody's getting busy.
Exciting times, exciting times. So, Fergal, you are originally from Ireland, is that correct?
That's correct, Ireland. I rode in England for a long time and then moved my tack over to America, went back to Europe, Dubai, and I'm back based in America.
So tell me what it was like growing up in Ireland. Did you grow up in a horse racing family?
Yeah, I started off show jumping and then pony racing when I was about 13, 14, started riding pony races and then served my apprenticeship, which would be the bug, over in England. Was leading bug rider in England and then just carried on my career as a journeyman.
So you were riding pony races at a very young age. And when you started riding pony races, did you have in mind then at that early young age that you wanted to be a jockey?
Yeah, that's all I've ever wanted to be, was a jockey. So it was pretty straightforward for me. It was just one dimension. It was just what I was going to do from when I was a young age. So I didn't have to do too much career advice. It was all mapped out for me.
What sparked that interest?
My parents had horses at home, and we grew up on the farm with horses, and we just always had ponies and show jumping, like I say, and I've always been around horses since I can remember. So it was from a very young age. It was just something that I just took to naturally, and I enjoyed being around them.
Now, your brother is the trainer, Cal Lynch. Of course, he just had a horse that was on the Derby trail, El Arib. And what was it like growing up with him? Were you guys competitive? Did he want to ride at that young age, or what was that like?
He tried riding for a bit, but I think the weight got the better of him, and he enjoyed eating more than he did horse racing. So he went down the training route. He came to America very young, and I went to England when I was very young. So we both went in different directions.
Well, your parents must be proud of both of you, all the success that you have both found. And so you grew up knowing what you wanted to do from a very young age. And how did you go about taking that path to becoming a jockey? Was there a jockey school there in Ireland, or did you just come up the hard way?
In England, I went to Doncaster Racing College and spent a few weeks there. But I had already got a job lined up in England with Jimmy Fitzgerald. So I came over, went over to England. I rode track work for him for a long time, and then I went to Reg Hollinshead, who had a lot of good, successful young riders come through his books, like Walter Swinburne, Paul Edry, Kevin Darley. You know, a lot of top-class jockeys came through under his tuition, and I went there, and that was the snowball effect from there. I was an apprentice, and then got me a job afterwards with William Haggis when I left Reg Hollinshead. So
you were taught by some of the best, it sounds like. And what some of your mentors at such a young age starting out, what was the best piece of advice they gave you?
Wasn't really advice, just being around some of the best riders and some of the best trainers. It was always just keep working hard, keep believing in yourself. You just got to keep working hard at this game, you know, never give up. I think that was the best advice I ever got.
That's exactly right. And I'll be honest, I don't know much at all about international racing or what's all involved in learning overseas, but did you start from the ground up? Did you start grooming horses and, you know, learning the hard way?
Yeah, I did. I did all my own ponies and everything growing up, and came over and spent time on the ground in England for the first 6 months that I was there. But it all happened pretty quick for me when I was 16, 17. As soon as I got my license, the second year I was leading rider, so
it just
really happened very quick for me.
Sounds like it came pretty natural, so you felt very comfortable on a horse.
Yeah, I felt very comfortable on a horse because I'd spent, you know, 7 or 8 years before that growing up with them and riding in pony races, so I had probably a very good head start on other jockeys that were just starting out.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Did you participate in sports or anything like that as a young kid?
Soccer and golf were my two things that I used to enjoy doing, but like I say, most of my time was taken up by riding the ponies and looking after them, and working with horses takes up a lot of time.
This is very, very true. Very true. And prior to taking out your license and you were galloping and you were trying to, you know, prepare yourself for riding races, how many horses would you gallop in the morning?
It's a little bit different in Europe. You would ride maybe 3 or 4 sets in the morning. That would be, they would last an hour each. Each set would last over an hour. So It'll be three or four sets every morning, 7 days a week.
Yeah, that's very different. So you would go out in the backfields and just spend an hour?
Yeah, it'd be a trail ride. It'd be a trail ride to the gallops. You'd maybe gallop a mile and a half, and then the trail ride back to the stables. Obviously, it's different in Europe where the horses are trained in individual training barns rather than on a racetrack. So it could be a 20, 30-minute walk to the gallops.
That sounds fun. I mean, hopefully you're on a good horse, not something that's all rambunctious. And, you know, that's a long time to spend with one that's acting up. But
yeah, well, that teaches you how to ride a lot better, I think. You know, you learn a lot from riding the longer you spend on a horse and getting the horse, having to teach the horse to relax. And it's a good education, especially for a young jockey. If they can sit on a horse for an hour and the horse is playing up, then you've got to find a way or make it relax. And that becomes useful whenever you're riding in a race. If a horse is very keen early on, and you've just got to get it to settle, otherwise you won't get home.
Yeah, exactly. That definitely makes sense. Do you think that's the better way versus how they do things here in the U.S., where you're right there by the track, you can get, you know, anywhere from 10, 12, 14 horses in the morning if you're really busy? Do you think that's a better way to spend more time with a horse in the morning?
I think they both have their benefits. You know, you learn a lot more about the clock in America and speed and what speed you're going and how the trainers want things to be done. It's two completely different ways of training. You know, it's like different trainers have different ways of training horses. Some don't breeze as often as others, and some trainers breeze the horses a lot. And everybody tries to find the best way that they think gets the most out of a horse. So I don't think there's any right or wrong way or any better way than another, but it's just finding what's best for the horse or the jockey.
Jockey Fergal Lynch is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Fergal, when you were 16, 17, you took out your license as an apprentice. And how does that system work in Europe? I know it works here. You know, you have a year after your fifth winner. How does it work over there?
In Europe, you get £7 allowance down to 10 winners, I think it is, and then down to £5 allowance till 50 winners, and then your last 50 winners is £3 allowance up until you ride your, I think it was back then, I think it was the 95th winner or 100th winner, and then you'd lost your bug, so it lasted as long as it took you to ride 100 winners.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah. And did you find success immediately?
Yeah, like I say, I went through my apprenticeship very quickly, maybe too quickly, as it turns out. With, you know, a lot of young riders, they breeze through their bug, but they don't actually get to make as many contacts as they could do, or, you know, the foundations, you get to learn a lot more over time. And I think sometimes it happens very quick for young jockeys, and, you know, they don't get as much experience as perhaps they need, or build up enough contacts that when they lose a bug, you know, the next bug rider's coming along, and it can make it difficult then to keep your business alive and keep your business going.
So you obviously just took off pretty quickly, but did you have any mentors there in the jocks room that showed you the ropes?
Yeah, I had a lot of friends and grew up with a lot of good riders in England. So it's a bit like America, you know, you just, people take you under the wing and they look after you.
Do you remember your first victory?
My first victory, Bold Aristocrat, Southwell. I'm not going to tell you the year because I can't remember. It's probably a long time ago.
Do you remember what happened during the race?
I remember it was on the dirt, and he broke. He was a very keen horse, and I had to settle him. It was a 6 furlong race. I got him to settle, and the gap came at the 2 furlong marker. He burst through, and I didn't actually realize I'd won until probably 5 strides after the wire.
Okay, here's a question for you. Here in the States, when a jockey has their first victory, all of the other jocks in the room, you probably know this, come out and dump them with water and eggs and everything else. Do they do that in Europe?
No, they don't, thank God. I haven't seen it being done anywhere else apart from America, but it is quite a christening, a baptism of fire, I suppose. You know, it's a nice thing, and they expect to get it. They expect it to happen now, you know?
Yes, yeah, it's...
As long as it's not in Penn National in the ninth race.
In January.
In January. I'd say it's not very nice when you get covered then, but...
No, I wouldn't think
nice
so.
Nice in the summer.
I wouldn't want it. Yeah, Penn National, definitely not. But you won your first victory. It took you a while to even realize you did that. And you mentioned it was on the dirt. So I'm assuming that the majority of races in Europe, however, are on the grass. Is that correct?
Yeah, 90% of them are on the turf, like I say. They've got four or five all-weather tracks in England. Some are Tapeta, Fibre Sand. Some are heavier. They're all different types of surfaces, so you have to adapt. But like I say, 90% of the racing is on the turf.
And I'm assuming that has helped you become a very, very accomplished turf rider here in the States as well.
Yeah, I mean, turf riding is a different skill. It's a different, things happen a little bit quicker. It's imperative that you save ground. And when you make your move and trying to save energy for the right time and especially speed, if the track's riding softer ground, you've got to adjust to the conditions of the turf track.
Yeah, it's definitely a different game altogether. Like you said, it's much different riding on the grass versus dirt, and even all weather. And I never had a lot of experience on the synthetic type racetrack, but what's that like?
It would be pretty similar to dirt. Things happen a little bit slower, and people you have to move wide to get out of the kickback and give your horse a clear run. So they don't race as tight on the dirt or on the synthetic. It's a lot easier to maneuver, and it's a lot easier to see what's going on around you. You know, and the Tapeta ride's very similar to turf. It's a very springy surface, a very fair surface, and you ride quite tight on it.
Now, the synthetic racetracks have been somewhat controversial here in the States. What is your opinion on that type of surface overall?
It depends on the weather. I think the weather has a lot to do with it, the synthetic surfaces. I know the Tapeta changes a lot whenever it's hot and cold. Being over in Dubai with the Tapeta, if it was the sun was shining, then the oil would come through and it would make the surface slower. And as it got cooler at night, the surface would tighten up. But the synthetic surfaces, it all depends on the horses are training on it and if they're used to it, or if all of a sudden they go out on soft ground or firm ground, it's completely different. So it's just a different way of training, I think. And it's more to do with the horse being used to the surface than it is the actual surface itself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Sounds like you've ridden everywhere. Ferrell, you mentioned Dubai, and I'd love to go into more detail about that here in a minute. But let's go back to, you found much success as an apprentice. Did you say earlier that you were leading rider? As an apprentice?
Yeah, I was champion apprentice, which would be Bug Boy in England. Won that title. And then, you know, like I said, but I had done this very quick. So, you know, the following years then were a little bit tougher to keep going. And I went back to the north of England where I had a lot of success and rode for a lot of good trainers, Kevin Ryan and Sir Michael Stout. And I got a lot of support from guys like that and rode a lot of nice horses and a lot of winners for them then to get reestablished.
Yeah, it's always challenging when you lose your bug.
That's probably the hardest part as a jockey, when you lose your bug and just keep grinding. And, you know, you think you've made it, you think it's easy. You think it's always going to be good. And you just take it for granted how easy it is when you have a bug. Yeah. When you lose your bug, that's when the real work starts.
This is very true. I remember very well. And do you think that matters that much taking weight off of a horse?
Well, I would say the scientifically, it's proven that I think it was 2 pound added up to a length, was it? Or it's about that. So I think a 10 pound off a horse's back over a longer distance race, over a mile race, makes a huge difference. Maybe not so much in a sprint, but in a longer race, then it has a huge emphasis on the horse. And plus, if a 10 pound bug or a 5 pound bug is riding with a lot of confidence and riding winners every day, then it really can accelerate a horse.
Well, obviously, you started doing well even after losing your bug, Fergal, and you said you went to North England and you're riding for some great connections there. How long did you stay there?
I think I stayed there. I probably stayed up there for about 10 or 12 years. I rode up in the north of England.
Long time. So what were some of the major victories you won while there?
On the York Ebor, I rode a win at Royal Ascot as an apprentice. Rode a winner for the Queen, for Sir Michael Stout. Chris Kinn in the D Stakes, who went on to win the Derby. Golan. I rode a lot of nice maiden horses, and broke their maidens, and then the stable jockey, Sir Michael's, would obviously ride them in the classics, but I got to sit on a lot of nice Grade 1 horses, and I was very privileged. They've ridden so many nice horses over my career so far, so...
You rode for the Queen?
Queen of England, yeah. We did a lot of horses in training with Sir Michael Stout, and rode a lot of horses for her during my career over there.
So I'm assuming you met her in person?
I've been in the paddock with her at Ascot, I didn't ride for her at Ascot, but I've been in her presence.
That's pretty amazing. Amazing. Fergal.
She's very, very, loves her horses, loves horse racing, and she's very switched on when it comes to the breeding side of it, and her knowledge of horses is very deep.
You mentioned stable jockey. You were a stable jockey. So here in the States, it used to be more so you had contracts with a trainer back in the day, and now it's just pretty much a free-for-all. You go out in the mornings and you try to wrangle up business.
Hustle.
And you know how it is now. And
yeah,
in Europe, though, you said stable jockey. So do you pretty much just ride for particular trainers and get on their horses in the morning?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. In most of Europe, they have, you know, the big yards would have their own stable jockey, maybe two or three stable jockeys, like Godolphin have William Buick, James Doyle, you know, the Frankie Dettori, you know, is retained by Al Shakab. The bigger outfits, like, they have their own jockey so that they can always get them. They're always available. And it builds up a good rapport. And then the smaller trainers, then you have outside rides for the other trainers. When your stable hasn't got runners, your agent can put you on other horses.
So you have agents in Europe too?
Yeah, but the agent usually works from home, and he could do anything up to 20 or 30 jockeys at a time.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
I know my agent had, 50 jockeys at one stage, jumps and flat.
Oh my goodness.
So he was just flat out at home on the computer, but we'd have a 5-day entry stage and then a 24-hour declaration. So you could see the entries 5 days in advance and then 24 hours before there would be the final declarations. So I suppose the nominations would be 5 days out for every race. So the agent could go through and try and figure out which was the best horses to get on.
That sounds like a lot of work to me.
Different system. Different system, but it seems to work quite well.
You mentioned your particular agent also had jump jockeys. Did you ever ride in a jump race?
No, never rode in a jump race, thank God.
Smart man.
Didn't go down that route. It's a hard sport. That's a different ball game, and them guys are...
I think they're crazy, personally.
Yeah.
Seriously. Seriously, you talk to some of them and they start mentioning all the bones they broke in and watch some
and
of those
falls. Yeah, you know, you're not gonna go 100 or 50 rides without having a fall. So them guys are, they're tough. They're made of steel. Some of them, like AP McCoy, I think he broke every bone in his body and rode with broken wrist, a broken rib.
Oh my God!
You know, broken collarbone and strapped it up and got on with it.
Jeez. Now, we might be crazy, but they're insane. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
No, thank you. But all the respect in the world for those guys. My goodness. Ugh. Anyway, Virgil, you mentioned Dubai. So what other countries did you ride at?
Well, in the wintertime, there wasn't, like I said, there wasn't that much racing. It was just, there was, used to be just 2 or 3 all-weather tracks in England. So I went to India. I rode in India for a winter for 6 months. I spent in India. I went to India a few times. Dubai, Spain, France, Italy, Germany, Dubai, Australia, America, South Africa. South Africa was beautiful. Horse racing has given me a great opportunity to travel the world, and you really test your own skills against the rest of the world. I think you learn so much more by traveling and seeing how different trainers train, how different countries run their horse racing, and it's just a big eye-opener.
I would say so. My goodness. What would you say your favorite country to ride in was?
I'd have to say Dubai was probably one of the nicest places I've been. Maidan is just, it's fantastic facilities. The royal family have done a great job over there. Just basically everything's for the horse and the jockeys and the trainers, and they've taken a little piece from everywhere in the world and just made it the most amazing place to be on and off the track.
Well, Virgil, I want to pick your brain a little bit more about some of these other countries, but right now we have to take a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. But the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. John Velasquez was victorious in the only Grade 1 of the weekend as he won the Man O' War aboard Zukova at Belmont Park. Velasquez finished in the money on 59% of his mounts with 3 wins, 3 seconds, and 7 third-place finishes. Irad Ortiz Jr. led North America in earnings last week by winning 32% and coming in the money on 61% of his mounts. Ortiz totaled the most wins with 10 and added 4 seconds and 5 third-place finishes. Angel Arroyo had a solid week, highlighted by a win in the Grade 2 Ruffian aboard Highway Star. Arroyo won 33% and finished in the money on 61% of his mounts with 6 wins, 3 seconds, and 2 third-place finishes. Miguel Mena was the first rider to be voted the Jockey of the Week without actually winning a race. In the 8th race at Churchill on Saturday, Mena found himself next to a riderless horse whose reins were hanging dangerously close to his front legs as he ran. In a demonstration of exceptional decision-making and horsemanship, Mena managed to catch the loose horse's reins and flip them over his head, preventing the horse from becoming tangled in his reins. This act of bravery cost Mena the win, as he still finished second, but more importantly protected the horses and the riders behind the loose horse. Mena finished the week with 5 seconds and 4 third-place finishes from 23 mounts. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at jockeytalk360.com and for Kindle at amazon.com. Half a Chance is the story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any racing fan. Visit jockeytalk360.com for more information. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 Weekly Update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at jockeytalk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Reporting Star's coming on, obviously only a length. Reporting Star only a length and a half behind, is desperate to make up the ground. And the others are running now, Lee Tarr of Texas and Kagan. And caving in is obviously challenged by Reporting Star. Obviously Reporting Star, and here comes Lee. And bulldozing through as well, right between horses, Mondialiste. Mondialiste coming. Mondialiste has got up to win the Woodbine Mile. Second Lee, then came obviously in Kagan.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Fergal Lynch. Fergal, we just heard the replay of the 2015 Grade 1 Woodbine Mile, your victory aboard Mondialiste. And I want to talk about that here in a second. But first, before the break, we were talking about all of the different countries you've ridden in. You mentioned India, Dubai, Spain, France. I can go on and on and on. Something that struck me funny, India. I did not know that India had much in the form of horse racing there. So what was it like riding there?
India was a great place to ride. They're very, very passionate about the horse racing. There's some very big families over there, the Poonawallas, Vijay Mallya, Dr. Ramaswamy, who's not with us anymore, but he had a lot of horses in training. They spent a lot of money on brood mares and stallions, and they're in the horse racing in a big way, and they've got a big following in India. They have their classics over there, and they have a lot of racing, especially in the winter period, which was ideal for English and European jockeys to go over there and spend somewhere in the winter where it was a little bit warmer. And it's a fascinating country to be in. So different from anywhere else in the world. It's a third world country, but it's also one of the richest countries in the world as far as property goes, and the wealth is phenomenal.
Huh. I learned something new every day. I did not know that, Virgo. That is very interesting.
Yeah, they've racetracks all over Bombay, Madras, Calcutta, Chennai, Bangalore. It's a big setup, and it's a lot of fun.
And what was it like riding there as far as other jockeys? You mentioned earlier in the show it was such a great learning experience to ride in so many countries because you see the different riding styles and how people ride in different countries. What was it like there as far as that goes?
The majority of the races would be European riders, so it would be pretty similar to Europe. But a lot of some of the Indian jockeys coming through, they were good riders, and they learned a lot from the Europeans going over there, and some of their jockeys have turned out to be very good riders as well. So no, it was a good experience for both them and European jockeys going there for the winter. It seemed to mix in well together, and they were always very inquisitive as to they wanted to come to England in the winter time, and the summer time is their winter time. So they would come to England as well and learn to ride, and they were getting more jockeys coming through and learning more about European riding, riding horses.
Well, one country we have not yet mentioned, Fergal, is North America. And we just heard, like I said, the replay of the 2015 Grade 1 Woodbine Mile. Is that when you first arrived in North America, 2015, or what year was that?
No, I first came over here, I think, in 2008. I stayed for 2 years in Philadelphia, and then I went back to Europe. And then when I came back and won the Woodbine Mile, I thought, oh, I'd like to come back to America again. So I came back last year, spent the winter down in Florida after that, and then I moved back up to Maryland and brought my tack to Maryland and going again in America.
And here you are. Here you are, Virgil. Tell us about that victory in the Woodbine Mile. How did the race set up for you?
Well, they went very quick. We had a beautiful improving Galileo horse, Monday Least, and he'd won a few races in England, and the trainer knew that I'd ridden in America and knew the turf tracks pretty well over here. It was obviously my first ride in Woodbine, first time I'd been there, but we jumped out, we went pretty quick, and I had to just be patient. He was a hold-up horse. It was soft ground, and when the pace folded, obviously went to the lead, and a few horses chased after him, and I just sat back on my horse and rode him to come home, and the gaps came at the right time, and luckily we got through, burst through in the inside, and managed to get up on the wire.
And that was a Grade 1. Was that your first graded stake victory?
It was in America, yeah.
In America. Had to be a pretty great feeling to show up at Woodbine for the first time and take that.
Yeah, no, it was a great day. Great friends of mine, the owners, Mr. and Mrs. Turnbull, David O'Meara, does a fantastic job in England. It was a great team effort to bring a horse over and win the Grade 1, you know. And then the horse came back last year with the stable jockey, Danny Tudhope, and won the Arlington Million. So, you know, he's a very good horse. It was a privilege to ride him that day.
Very talented horse. What was he like to ride? Was he keen, or was he pretty relaxed?
No, he's very relaxed. He gets on his toes a little bit before the race. He gets a bit warm, and he's a colt. He's by Galileo. He knows he's good. You know, he's one of them. He prances, and he wants to get on with it. But when the gates open, he does his touch button. But it's like any of them with a good horse, they're usually very easy to ride, and you can put them where you want, and they pick up when you ask them to.
Definitely nice to ride those kinds, right?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
So, Virgil, you decided after that you were going to stay in North America, and you went down to Florida. What did you first think of Florida?
I love Florida. I was based up in Palmettos, and I rode every day. I was riding down the Gulfstream and going back, and I wanted to see. Hooked up with Wesley Ward down in Palmettos and rode all the babies in January, February, and March, and I really enjoyed that experience as well. I always wanted to see how he trained two-year-olds, and I wanted to see Florida and see what it was like for the winter. It was obviously a very tough meet. You know, you've got the best jockeys in the world down there, Javier Castellano, Johnny Velasquez, Luis Saez, you know, Mr. Pletcher, Mr. Brown, his trainers, they had fantastic strings down there. Here, McLaughlin. It was just a great place to spend the winter.
Well,
and again, it's another learning experience.
Well, and Wesley Ward, that's definitely someone
that was fun.
You want to get in with, most definitely. And how does he train his two-year-olds?
His babies, he's just a natural. He brings them forward. He's a bit like, compared to Jack Berry back in England, going back in time, he used to just have his babies forward, and they knew their job. They were taught very early on, you know, you got to break sharp, and they win the races from the gate. They're out into their stride quickly on the bridle, and just teaches them short, sharp bursts of speed, and the race is over. By the time the other horses catch up, the race is over.
Nice to ride,
especially in America, going 4.5 furlongs, 4 furlongs. It's very hard to make up ground on a baby getting kickback maybe for the first time, or not being as sharp out of the gate as some of those.
Get out and go. Have you ridden at Charlestown yet, Fergal?
No, I haven't had the pleasure of riding Charlestown yet, but it's on the bucket list.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned 4.5, so that made me think of good old Charlestown. Yeah, yeah,
the bull ring.
Yes. Get out and go there, too. You better.
Yeah. I don't think it'd be coming from off the pitch.
No, you can't do that. Nope. Not going to happen.
Not from what I've seen, anyway, no.
Yeah, no.
Looks like you need to be forward and on your game.
It's a scramble, let me tell you. It's a scramble. But anyway, so you found success in Florida, and let me ask you this question again. You see a lot of European riders here come to the U.S., and they have a different riding style. They ride, they move more in the saddle. And did you ride like that when you first came to the States, or did you adapt pretty quickly, or did you not? Did you just stick with your style?
I think I grew up, and when I was growing up in England, Frankie Dettori was obviously, you know, my idol when I was growing up, and Frankie's what I would call like mid-Atlantic. He never looks out of place in the Breeders' Cup against the American jockeys. He rides very, very low, and he gets down in behind a horse, and very mainstream and very stylish rider, you know. Frankie's probably one of the best riders around the world that could ride anywhere. And not look out of place. And I like to think that's, I tried to model myself on him. And you've got to move more with the horse, and your legs are moving, whereas the American jockeys are perched up very short, and the stirrups, and they seem to be more arms and upper body strength. And I think on the turf, you need to help the horse sometimes. And
so you
I think that makes a bit of a difference. That's the only difference between European riders and American jockeys, but
well, Frankie,
it's how the horse runs for you. Some people have different styles, and that's just the way it is. It works for some people and doesn't for others. But I mean, Flavien Prat's come over here and done very well in California. Florent Garou. There's a lot of riders that've come over from Europe and done well over here as well.
Well, and add your own name there to the list, Fergal. You're doing very well yourself. So what would you describe your riding style as? Would you say you're more of a speed rider or come from behind rider? What would you say as far as that goes?
My preference is to come from behind. I like being patient on a horse. I like just getting the horse in the rhythm and timing the challenge at the right time and making the right moves. I think that's more of an achievement than just going out in front and hoping they hold on.
I completely agree with you. Don't get me wrong. I'll win either way, but
I'll win either way, but right. Sometimes if the horse is a front runner, and you know, a lot of the trainers here like their horses on the lead and on the speed, mm-hmm. like Mark Johnson's horses at home, they go to the front, and that's always what they're told, you know, jump, don't take them back, don't go forward, but just give the horse's head and let him get in their rhythm, and that's pretty much it. The best instructions you can get from the trainer, just judge the race as it comes to you, how the horse breaks and what position you can get.
Of course, but there is something. I was the same way. I loved just passing everyone down the lane, and that is just, to me, it's the biggest rush to win coming from off the pace
I suppose it's like driving a car, Formula One drivers, you know.
Yeah.
Like you weave between cars and accelerate at the right time, and that's where the thrill is. If you're out in front and you don't pass another car, it's not as much fun, I suppose.
Right. Well, and you kind of feel like, you know, they're coming to get me. It's kind of that panic feeling, I suppose. But again, a win's a win. But there is, to me, as you mentioned, there's a greater rush with coming from
there's
off
more
the
satisfaction
pace.
When you've done something that you think you've made a difference in.
Exactly.
And
you
you've
feel
got
like
the horse to do something that maybe somebody else wasn't able to get out of the horse. And you get more of a thrill out of it, definitely.
Yeah, you feel like you had the best judgment as far as where to go and timing.
You made the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely agree with you on that, Fergal. And so how long did you stay in Florida?
I was down there for the winter, so it was 3 or 4 months. I was down there for 3 or 4 months in, like I said, in Palmettos, and then I moved my tack up to Maryland. I'd originally decided to go back to Europe, but I stayed in Maryland for, I was going to stay here for a few weeks, and that was just over a year ago. I'm still here.
Why did you decide Maryland?
My brother was up here. He trained here in Laurel, so I came up to see him, rode a few horses for him. Scott Silver took my book, my agent Scott Silver. He took my book, and things just got rolling, and I decided I wanted to stay, and I'm glad now I did.
Yeah, Scott Silver's a very good agent. Does he still have Trevor McCarthy as well?
Still has Trevor McCarthy and myself, yeah.
Yeah. Winning duo there, sounds to me.
Yeah.
Now, I heard a funny story about you and your brother during a race.
I'm sure it was funny.
Yes, it seemed funny to me. It might not have been funny to your brother anyway. But tell us, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. You take it away. Tell us that story.
The one where he got taken down?
Yes.
Yeah, well, we were in Pimlico last year, and his horse crossed over from the gate and caused a bit of interference, and my filly was running at the end and finished second, and I had to claim foul for my connections and for myself, so we had to claim foul, and the right decision was made by the stewards that his horse came down and my horse got put up, and it was awkward.
It was awkward.
But it had to be done.
Of course.
And if it was the other way about, I'm sure if it was the other way about, he would have done the same. So
absolutely.
That's horse, it just happened to be his horse.
Brother against brother, but what do you do? Way he goes.
Yeah.
Way he goes. Did he talk to you afterwards?
It was a while ago, but I think he got over it pretty quickly. I think he knew he was coming down.
Yeah, well, like you said, fair is fair. So what do you do?
Fair is fair.
Yes.
All's well and love and war.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And did you, when you first arrived in Maryland, did you find that you found success pretty quickly?
Did I what, sorry?
Did you find success pretty quickly?
Yeah, like I said, we just got rolling. Had a lot of support from Kieran McGee. Kieran gave me a lot of winners early on, and it really got the ball rolling. And then, like I say, Scotty Silver's done a great job for both myself and Trevor, and I kept us both very busy. And we've both been working very hard, the three of us, and it's been a good success story for all three of us.
Yeah, Kieran is someone you want to ride for in Maryland. He's
Oh yeah, for sure. He's a lot of big turnover, a lot of horses, wins a lot of races, and does a fantastic job.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. I rode for him a few times back in Maryland. Quite the character as well. So that's
great. And he's Irish.
And he's Irish. So
yeah,
there you go.
You
guys got to stick together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sounds like trouble. But so you found success pretty quickly. And Virgil, I have not yet asked you, do you have a family? Do you have a wife and kids?
I have a wife, Pamela. She has emigrated everywhere with me. She's been my rock. She's been everything. She's been a great support. Even when I've had bad days and things weren't going so well in my career, she's always been there and encouraged me and kept going. And like I say, she's emigrated 3 or 4 times with me and always supported me. Never left my side.
Very important to have.
And two small dogs.
And two small dogs. I love it.
Yeah.
It's very important to have a good support system, especially in this business. It's full of ups and downs, as you know. And so she's living in Maryland with you now.
Yeah. She's here with me now. And like I say, she's just been a great support and always been there by my side, you know.
How did you guys meet?
actually met in Pontefract at a racetrack in Europe, in England. She was in the paddock for the last race, and she was along with one of the owner's friends, and I asked her out, and 3 days later we moved in together.
3 days?
Yeah.
Wow. That's moving pretty fast, but it worked out for you.
Yeah, exactly. That was 13 years ago.
Wow, yeah, it definitely worked out well for you. Wow.
Yeah.
Too funny. So did she work in the industry, or she was just there with friends?
No, she was just there with her mom and a friend. She didn't work in the industry. She just finished college, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. I love it. So now, are you planning on sticking here in Maryland?
Yeah. For the time being, we've bought a house in Maryland, so I'm literally around the corner from Laurel Racetrack. And like I said, I drive to Fairhill a few days a week, and Parks, Penn National. We're starting in Delaware in the next few weeks, so we're going to be busy, hopefully.
Laurel Park, one of my favorite racetracks to ride at, and I haven't been back in a couple years. They made a lot of improvements to that racetrack, so I've heard.
Even since I've come here within a year, I mean, the turf track's one of the nicest turf tracks I've ever ridden on.
Yes.
It's a beautiful turf track, and we've got 6 courses there where you can move the rail in and out. Fantastic big sweeping bends. They've spent a lot of money on the backside, on the front side. The grandstand, everything's phenomenal. They have great management there, Sal Sinatra, Tim Ritto. You know, these guys know what they're doing, and they know what they want, and they know how to go about it and getting things done.
Yeah, it's a beautiful racetrack, and for you to say that's one of the best turf courses that you've been on, that says a lot, because you've ridden on a lot.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is. They do a great job maintenance, and like I say, it's so big compared to a lot of the other tracks in America. When they're on the inside, they can be quite tight and quite front-running tracks, if you know what I mean. They can be, whereas I think Laurel's more of a fair racetrack, and the turf track rides like more like a European track.
Mm-hmm. And I love those big, wide, sweeping turns. It's
sweeping bends.
Yeah, I love it. Didn't they add a new big screen to the infield as well?
Yeah, it's big screen infield. I think they've opened up 6 new bars in the grandstand. They've spent millions redeveloping the backside. And the plans for the future are just phenomenal.
I'm going to have to take a visit there. It's been too long long since I've been back. Are they? I've heard rumors they might bring the Preakness there. I don't know if that's true. Have you heard anything about that at some point?
I don't know what the plans are, but I know that Pimlico at the minute are having the second phase of how much it's going to cost to fix Pimlico, and how much money they need to reinvest in Pimlico to bring it up to the standard that they want in Pimlico. So I don't know. It's all up in the air at the minute, and they're trying to get the Breeders' Cup here in 2022. It should be a fantastic achievement.
Yeah.
So it's just all guns blazing. It's Laurel at the moment.
Yeah, good things ahead.
Maryland horse racing's really back on its feet, and they're doing some great work here.
Yeah, I tell you, Maryland was the best when I rode there. Just the people there, great horsemen. I really just always loved riding in Maryland. And again, good things to come from the sounds of it, Fergal. And just a couple minutes left here on the show, I want to ask you a few more questions. What goals do you still have for yourself as far as your riding career goes?
I suppose more graded stakes wins, you know, getting on that one big horse, the one good 2-year-old or one good 3-year-old. I think it's very important in America, you know, finding these good 2-year-olds and good 3-year-olds to ride, and riding in the bigger races would always be a top of the list. Just to ride in more graded stakes and find a really good horse, you know?
I think that's every jockey's goal,
Right, every jockey's goal, yeah. I think everybody wants to be riding the Derby or riding the Preakness or riding the Belmont, you know, but...
Do you have any good mounts? Do you have any good mounts coming up this weekend on the Preakness undercard?
Yeah, we're riding the Black Eyed Susan for Mr. Pleasure. We won the race in Laurel, the win and you're in, and won the Tessio for Mr. Brown and Twisted Tom, but I don't think he's nominated for the Preakness, unfortunately, but we've got 10 rides on Friday, and don't know about Saturday yet until Wednesday, but hopefully it'll be a busy weekend.
No, yeah. I just, like I said, I love the Preakness, and sounds like you have some big things coming up here for you, Fergal. Big things coming up. It's very exciting. And you said, you know, if the opportunity came, would you ever go to somewhere like New York or Kentucky?
I would, obviously, you know, if the horses are shipping there, then it'd be a pleasure to go and ride New York and Kentucky. But at the minute, I'm just happy where I am. And there's a lot of nice horses here, like I say, in Fairhill and in Laurel. There's a lot of nice horses, and hopefully we can come across a really good one.
Well, good things ahead for you, Fergal, and wishing you all the best. Hoping for a big weekend for you, and wishing you all the best with your career. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to, and a big schedule coming up this week for the Preakness. Check it out. Don't forget, join me and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, tomorrow at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. We will bring you 3 hours of live racing coverage right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dalapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.